to Slightly Offsides, your perfect game plan for all things college and professional football. Hosted by Dre and Mike.
Welcome back, everybody, to Slightly Offsides, presented by Better Edge. Play the game without getting played. We've got new swag, thanks to us from Better Edge. So, what a week two of college football. Upset week, if you will. Three, I think, out of the top 10 lost. Almost four with Bama. Or was it just two?
Baylor, Notre Dame, A&M, and you also A&M. Got Wisco.
Yeah, so it was three. Yeah.
Wisco was like 15.
Fun Belt Conference took three of them down.
Yep.
I think they're the new Power 5 conference. them and the American are going to take over the ACC and the Pac-12 when they do that whole, like, meld into the other conferences thing in a couple years that we're all expecting. That's going to be the new Power 5. It's going to be the SEC, Big 10, Big 12, American Fun Belt Conference.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, I definitely am. It makes it a lot more interesting.
All right, so we'll do the same thing, but just a truncated version of last week, and then we'll talk in some of the major storylines. We'll just do some winners and losers. We'll just keep it to like one or two this week of each. Who wants to kick us off, or do you guys want me to get the ball rolling?
You got it. You're eager.
I'm eager. Okay. I'm going to start off with my first loser of the week, and it's going to be a pretty obvious one here. I'm going to go Notre Dame for the sole reason that, like, this game, there's nothing really special about this game if you're a Notre Dame fan, right? Like, Notre Dame has probably played 50,000 of these games in the last 10 years where it's just like, oh, in the third quarter, Notre Dame on the ropes against some team in South Bend, and then they find a way to pull it off through good defense and, like, one good offensive drive. And the reason why they're real losers, and I guess I extend it to Marcus Freeman, is they did something that they don't do in the past, which is turn the ball over at critical times again and again and again. They turned the ball over three times in the second half on crucial drives, and they're already calling for offensive coordinator Tommy Reese's head, and Marcus Freeman is the first Notre Dame coach in history to start out his tenure 0-3. So I'm going to say my biggest loser of the week, Notre Dame.
I'm going to be harsh with mine. I'm going to go Texas. They should have beat Bama that game. I'm sorry. You let Nick Saban, you keep him around. You can't put the game away. You know, you miss fields. You miss throws. I know Ewers goes down. That affects the game a lot. And that safety call was absolutely terrible. If you hold Bryce Young to under 100 passing yards in three quarters, you should be up by more than 3 points. You know, that Bama offense looked pretty bad the first three quarters. And then, you know, when it comes to crunch time, Bryce Young came, you know, he pulled up, had a few touchdown drives, and saves the Bama Crimson Tide. But, man, like, this could have been your moment. We've been saying Texas is back for years. Like, this actually could have been it. This could have changed your program. You had KD there. You had a ton of big recruits visiting. Imagine the type of win that would have been, you know, taking down Bama at home. But, you know, can't make plays when it matters. So that's a pretty harsh one. But, man, when Bama has 15 penalties, you can't lose that game.
Real quick, Dre, before you hop in here, I need to issue an apology on this game, because if you guys remember last week, I was clowning Texas, and I was very staunch on the fact that Bama was going to absolutely clock them. So I want to apologize to all the Longhorns out there,
that's
Matthew McConaughey, Kevin Durant, all of y'all. I'm very sorry. You guys deserve to win that game. Actually, in fact, Dre, if you remember our great friend and guest from last year, CFB Numbers, he actually puts out every week, he does like a post-win expectancy percentage based on the game, or post-game expectancy for winning. And I think Texas in that game was like 88%. So absolutely agree. They totally should have won that game. It was just frustrating to watch, and I'm not even a Longhorn fan. Yeah. So yeah. Pour one out for the debt for the horns down.
For the dead homies. My biggest loser of the week is Texas A&M. It's kind of self-explanatory. I think Jimbo has a lot to work on offensively. Haynes King is, I think he speaks for himself just in terms of where he's standing. It's not a great situation there. I mean, they have a few other guys that they can look towards, but I think that's a big question mark for A&M, and it definitely showed against a hot and ready App State team. I just love that they're ready to play every school this year. Like, they are ready to beat everyone's ass, and I love it.
Did you guys see the play in that game where the App State player strip sack? Like, he forced two fumbles in 5 seconds. He, like, forced the fumble on Haynes King, and then the O-lineman picks it up, and he's running down the field, and the guy
just fell on it,
punches
bruh.
It out again. That's so sick.
He should have just fell on it, bruh. I don't know what that O-lineman was doing, bro. He one thought of the season. It's like, shit, I can score 65 Man. Yards.
Yeah, that was a crazy game, and Greg, you made a great call on that one.
I'm not
looking back. That one was staring us in the face. Dre, did you call App State as well?
I didn't think they were going to win.
Or did you go Aggies?
But
I went Aggies.
I just didn't trust A&M's offense at all. Like, I know they have all that talent defensively. Their offense hasn't done anything to prove that, you know, even against a non-Power 5 team, that they can move the ball well. And you have, like, App State, I think A&M offense didn't touch the ball for a full 19 minutes in the second half because they had the kickoff return, and App State was just chewing down the clock, you know, running the ball, you know, playing physical football against 4- and 5-star recruits. You know, if you're Jimbo Fisher, this is a huge red flag for you. You got to fix this ASAP.
Yeah. 100%. That is a tough loss to take at home when you have all this excitement brewing. And they're going to have to shape up real fast because that SEC schedule is looming real quick in the front.
It's getting real deep.
Of that vehicle driving down the road. So they're going to have to figure that out. But Dre, did you have a winner?
I could start with the winners. Personally, you know, I think, and it's funny that, you know, Texas got one of the loser slots. I actually think Bama did a really good job, because if you think about it in this way, yeah, they played a very bad game, but I mean, even at their worst, they didn't lose. You know, they're still not losing. It's hard
you think
to imagine.
So, man?
It's hard to imagine them just taking an L in a situation like that. And I know that it's like, damn, bro, like, Bama always is winning, so on and so forth. Even whenever they're at their worst points, you could say that they should be one of the losers for the week. Technically, for a lot of people, they could be, you know, one of the losers for the week. But to me, I think it's still impressive. They don't drop the ball even whenever they have opportunities to drop the ball. And I think that's an important thing. Remember, we talked about this last year with Cincinnati. Sure, there's times where they were pretty close to losing that game, but they won, and they finished out the season, what, 12-0, and you know, they got the opportunity to go play in the playoff. So I honestly do think that even with that, I think it's the better thing for them is, even though it was close ball game, at least they won. And I think that's going to keep them alive, and it's going to keep spirits high. Like, imagine if you do lose to Texas week 2. What does the rest of your season look like? And people are already dropping Bama down. Imagine that. Even with a win, they're like, not as good as we thought.
Well,
let's move them down to 3.
Well, let's actually take a real quick break and talk about that, Jay, because I'm one of those guys actually that is, I'm starting to discredit this Bama team a little bit, and it's not because I don't think that they're one of the top 4 teams in the country. I think that they definitely are. Still, I think they're definitely gonna probably lose less than like 2 games in the regular season, make the playoffs as a top 3 team for sure, 100%. But this is a team that when you watch that game, right, when we were breaking down our pick, Texas is not an impressive defensive team. You could tell that the energy was there. They were playing out of their minds. But you play that game 100 times, Texas gets smoked 95% of the time on defense.
Like, so, it is okay, not a, so you, and this is probably one of the 5% times. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
My that point they don't is, get my smoked. Point is that, okay, when you look at the talent that Texas has on their defense, and they've been recruiting decent, but not like what we've expected from Texas historically. What concerns me, if I'm a Crimson Tide fan watching that game, is the amount of time, first of all, the amount of times that Bryce Young had horrible pass coverage.
Yeah. Horrible. Oh, yeah, the O-line was awful.
Blitz picking up.
The O-line,
right? O-line is a problem, and that's going to only accentuate, unless they can fix it, that's only going to look worse in the SEC against these physical front sevens. The second thing, what have we been talking about on this show since we started? Texas's secondary, historically, the last 4 years, has been like one of the worst secondaries in the country.
Yeah.
Bama's receivers could not get open. I mean, the times when Bryce wasn't running for his life, he was sitting in the pocket and outside of the pocket for 5 seconds at least, and he couldn't find somebody open. Like, if I'm a Crimson Tide fan, that's issues because... Yeah, you can sneak out a win against Texas. You can sneak out a win against like a Mississippi State and stuff. But you start to play a team that can actually figure out your defense and put points up on them with starters.
And so,
I mean, that's issues.
I'm still not as necessarily. I wouldn't be that concerned. I think they played. I actually think they played a pretty tough Texas team. The more that I watch them, the more I'm convinced of where they're at. I mean, I don't want to say they're back or anything, but they are a solid football program. They're not awful. This is, I think, Alabama's first test, and they definitely got the wind knocked out of them. But I, like I said, I don't think it's anything to worry about in the grand scheme of things. Like, I think their biggest challenges for the rest of the year are probably going to be Arkansas and Tennessee,
circle
maybe.
That, circle
Ole
that
Miss.
Mississippi State game.
Okay, yeah, I'll give it to you. Maybe Mississippi State wants to do something, and they typically like to do something. But... Bro, I really don't, you know, it's like I'm going to have to see more of a struggle, more of a fight for their life. And I even think that this was a fight for their life, but it happens once every year. You know,
yeah,
they play a tough
granted,
game every
what
year.
What I'm saying is an overreaction. It's supposed to be an overreaction. But, like, when they start playing in the SEC, just watch. Those are the two things from now on, every single week, week in, week out. Because we know Bryce Young's going to make his plays. We know the defense, especially, like, Will Anderson, the front seven, and those safeties, they're going to come to play. They're going to make big plays. But I'm going to be very keyed in on how the O-line plays and how the receivers are running their routes and getting separation. Because if they continue to go on through their schedule and they can't get separation, it's a very similar issue to kind of what Clemson has been facing. Those exact two issues have been what Clemson has been facing the past 2 or 3 years. I'd say 2 years, that have started to kind of slow the speed of that program. And you still see it with Clemson now. It's the O-line and it's the receivers.
I think
lack of playmaking and lack of talent out wide.
I think,
and it looks like
one
Bama has kind of caught that bug.
I'm not overly concerned about it, and it's because of Nick Saban. I mean, do you know how hard it is to motivate your team when you make the playoffs every year? And now you have something. You know, you guys almost lost to Texas. You guys played like shit. Can you imagine his halftime rant, his post game? He probably wasn't even happy post game. You know, he's probably yelling at his players. This is week two. Nick Saban has the rest of the year to get his team ready for the playoffs. Yes, this Bama team probably isn't as potent offensively. They don't have that X factor receiver like a Devontae Smith, Jerry Jeudy, Jalen Waddle that they've had. They don't have that. They have some experience, transfers, Tyler Harrell, for example, Jermaine Burton, but they don't have that superstar receiver that they've been accustomed to. They're throwing a lot of downs to Jahmyr Gibbs, and their offense also doesn't look as strong. But, I mean, they shut down Bijan Robinson. I thought, you know, I had Texas keeping it close, but I thought it was going to be in a completely different manner. You know, Bijan having a big game, a couple splash plays. He had 54 yards on like 20 carries. So they did their, you know, their run defense still looks very strong. It'll be interesting to watch them. I mean, if this says anything about how college football is about to be, I think No team is invincible this season, like we've seen in the past. I don't think there's any super teams this year. That'll make it more interesting for us as fans, so I'm not really complaining.
Okay, so the last thing I want to say is on all of that. If you take away, okay, they had one run that was Jace McClellan,
talking
81
about the
yards,
long one.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You take away that one run in Alabama on the entire day. First of all, total yards, they had less than 300 total yards if you take away that run. And then if you take away Bryce Young's 30-yard rush and you take away McClellan's run, they had like 30 yards on the ground the entire rest of the game. I'm overreacting. I will admit I'm overreacting. Those are not numbers that you're accustomed to seeing from an Alabama team, and certainly not against what we expect to be a pretty underwhelming Texas defense. Now, again, like, we're going to see how all this plays out, and I totally agree with both of you that, like, this, again, could be added to the whole, like, Mike D was an idiot reel at the end of the year, right, when Bama just starts obliterating people because Saban gets them right. But right now, if I'm a Crimson Tide fan, like, those are my big question marks, and I am, like, worried, because if we don't fix it, right, if I'm a Crimson Tide fan, which I'm not, but if I'm thinking of my team and I'm like, we don't fix this, okay, it's kind of like thinking about Ohio State the past few years, right? You don't fix your defense, there's going to be a game. Like, yeah, there were a couple games last year where Ohio State came back and won, or they were able to win just because their offense was so good. But there's games where they lost. And if Bama does not clean this up, their schedule is riddled with potential traps. Tennessee, Mississippi State, like, there are Arkansas, there are great teams on there that look just really in fine form right now. So I'm worried. I'm not saying that it's time to man the sirens, but I'm just saying, like, that's all I'm trying to say. It's just high alert for Crimson Tide. That's it.
I'll let you have it for this year.
So I got Kentucky.
Who do you have as your winner for the week?
You got Kentucky.
Don't you dare steal mine. Don't you? What did you just say?
Hey man, you can touch on some points after I'm done.
Man. That's all right. Yeah, I know. That's
but,
good.
Big dub.
Game respect
at
game
night
man,
against Florida. Florida came out week one. You know, emotional win at home against playoff contender Utah. And early in this game, like, Anthony Richardson did not look sharp. I think he started off 3 for 14 passing, and he ended the night really pretty bad, completion percentage. This is what I've been saying about Kentucky since the preseason. Physical football team, very well coached, fundamentals. They're not going to be one of the flashier teams in college football, but – you know, they're going to win 9-10 games this year. I think this win kind of cements them as potential top 15 team for the year, I would say. And they did it. You know, people were high on Will Levis. I don't think he played particularly well, and they really didn't need him to. So if you're on the bandwagon that he's Josh Allen 2.0, that'll just make them a much stronger team. And potentially put him in, you know, playoff contention if you think he's going to be that good. But shout out the Wildcats. They showed up last Saturday night. Statement win for them.
All right, Greg, couldn't have said it better myself. So I'll just echo what you said. Kentucky, I think part of what makes that win so impressive is that, kind of like you said, Greg, they did it on the road in the swamp right after a big game where optimism for that Gator program was at its peak, at least that it has been in probably the last 2 years. So that's a very impressive win. It'll be interesting to see how Kentucky plays. If they could play like this consistently, I mean, I agree with you. They potentially could end the year second in that division, right? And they could even give Georgia a run for their money. I don't know. That game is in Lexington this year, so who knows? But there's a lot of football to be played between then and now. So What I am going to say is for my winner, I'm going to kind of do two like half winners because they're both kind of just like cheapos. First one I'm going to do is Scott Frost, my homie, because this guy played, he coached so poorly. We talked about this at the beginning of the year.
I said midseason. Yep.
If Nebraska made it to, what was it, Greg, October 15th?
I think it was October
right?
1st.
No, but like, what was the cutoff for his bonus, right? It was like October 15th, October 1st. Okay, yeah. So if they waited until the beginning of October to fire him, they would have had to pay him less or half of
Talk
what they had to pay.
Talk about a golden parachute.
Him. So Scott Frost is the real winner here because this dude banked. Yeah, this dude banked an extra $7.5 million because he was so bad that they fired him 2 weeks earlier than they should have. And they fired him right before they played a top 15 team. So, that I mean, Scott Frost, hats off to you, man. Go take that check, put it in the bank.
He had to have mentioned something about it. Like, you know, I'm going to keep blowing games here until you fire me.
Oh, God. And then my second winner of the week, let me find them up here again. I'm going to go second winner of the week is the Big Ten East as a division. Okay. Big Ten East as a division, top to bottom, every single team after 2 weeks, undefeated. Every single team. If you're an SEC West fan, okay, the whole like SEC West is the best division in football, that argument, I'm not saying it doesn't hold weight, but this is a very strong consideration for the Big Ten East. That all teams are 2-0, and I'm gonna fact check myself right now to make sure that that's the case. But I believe that's what I saw. Drum roll, please. Yes, they're all 2-0. So, props to the Big Ten East.
Big time.
I'll throw a flyer in there too. Kansas. Good job, Kansas 2-0. Let's see how that lasts. They're currently at the top of the Big 12 conference. So, Jayhawks fans, take a screenshot of that. Okay, so let's move on. We kind of talked about all of the upsets this week. And
I wouldn't say
so
that yet.
One of the themes here is kind of like, and Greg, you kind of touched on it already. But, like, do you guys think this is here to stay? Do you think this was kind of, like, a weird week and we're going to go back to normal ways? Or do you just think that, like, the era of the 12-team playoff and only, like, one or two teams having, like, less than two losses is going to be the new norm?
I think certain teams are just set up better right now, if that makes sense. Like, for example, I look at, like, a BYU. They've had an opportunity to play a Baylor, and they're going to have an opportunity this week to play Oregon, and then they get to play Notre Dame and get a chance to whoop their ass if they really want to, you know, and even they even get a rock at Arkansas. So, like, you know, they have a tough schedule, but, I mean, they're proving their value and their worth. So I think some of these teams are going to show out and show up at certain points, and there's going to be – I think people are just scheduling more, you know, genuinely valuable games at the beginning of the season right now. I mean, before you would just want to cakewalk through just to have the record, because we all knew at one point the only thing that mattered was finishing the season undefeated because there was only two teams that made it, right? So now it's like, hey, you may be able to drop one ball game at the beginning of the season to a Notre Dame or Ohio State and still make it in. But, you know, right now I think certain teams are just built better, and I think that they're putting together a better schedule for them to actually last longer in terms of, you know, they're playing competition early. They're working out some of the kinks that they're going to have for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, early. Not all the, you know, in the past 10 years, there weren't always these big non-conference games. There's always a few, but I think the magnitude, I think it just keeps increasing. I think it's kind of the money talking as well. We've had some big, you know, non-conference clashes though these past few years, and I think what some of it comes down to is teams looking ahead too far. I don't think any team is immune from this, especially like playoff contenders, you know, but you got to show up every week. I think that's where college football is different than the NFL. In the NFL, you can drop a regular season game. You know, you don't want to string those together, but if you lose a game, it's not the end of the world at all. Even the best teams lose 4 or 5 games. But if you drop a game that you shouldn't in college football, like that can really derail your season. That could derail your playoff hopes, you know, even like your momentum, chances at, you know, a New Year's Six Bowl. Like we kind of saw Penn State last year. They had all the momentum. They started off 5-0, and then they just started playing pretty poorly. And, you know, what'd they finish, like 7-6 last year? So, you know, consistency is so important in football and staying focused, and I would say even more so in college football.
Okay. All right. So next discussion point here. We kind of touched on this, but I just want in like 30 seconds or less, I want you guys to kind of give your opinion on this. At this point, is Notre Dame bad, or did they just have two unlucky weeks? Like obviously week one wasn't really unlucky. Like they just got beat by a better team. Week two though, like, well, put yourself in the shoes of the Notre Dame faithful here. Like is your team bad, or does that 0-2 change dramatically by the end of the year?
I don't think they're bad. I think, you know, it's funny. Are they out of the playoff picture? And I was watching a video on this earlier. Hell yeah, they're done. It's over. Like, you know, you're not making it into the playoffs. But are they a bad team? Do I think they're going to drop one to Cal this week? Probably not. I think that they have some sort of chance. I know that Buckner got rocked, so we'll see how that, you know, works out. But everything else should
kind
be
of
fine.
Agree
like,
with
you,
that.
You recruit
I mean,
well, and you're
we'll
not,
see how they play against
program, so you should
they
be
gave
fine.
Ohio State a good game, a very good game, especially defensively. So you know that, you know, their defense is legit. You know, week two going in, you know, you're playing Marshall. I'm not sure. That just seems like one of those games, you know, like you mentioned earlier. They always have those one or two games. You know, it's close in the third quarter, and then they pull away a little bit, but they couldn't do it this time. If Chris Freeman is truly, like, going to be the next great head coach at Notre Dame, We want to see a good performance this week against Cal. We need to see 20-point victory against them. I don't think Cal is that great of a team. They struggled. They won by 6 points against someone like Idaho last week. Not a huge Cal fan this season, but we'll see what happens. I mean, you know, Notre Dame is 0-2, so long season ahead for them.
And another thing is, too, it kind of floats along with the consistency thing. I just hope that Notre Dame stops playing to the level of their competition. If they play the same way that they played Ohio State the first game of the week for the rest of the season, they maybe only lose one more game in the rest of the season. But if they continue to just play at the level of everybody else that's around them, I mean, they can drop easily up to 5 or 6 bowl games. So, like, that's it's just a reality. They're going to have to play the same way that they started the season every game for the rest of the season.
All right, and then you guys are going to love this topic here, but I would say we've got a handful here. Now that we're kind of getting our feet wet a little bit with the season, we've got a handful of, I wouldn't say quarterback controversies, but very intriguing propositions for a lot of teams that potentially could have playoff implications. So I'm gonna go through the list here, and we're just gonna talk through this. Some of them are controversies, like by design. It's like the first one, right, is by design, Michigan, and some of them are just kind of by happenstance, and we'll get to those. But
absolutely,
let's lead it
McCarthy.
Off with Michigan. Do you guys think, first of all, who do you think should be the quarterback at Michigan, right? And secondly, do you think the way that McNamara and Harbaugh are treating the situation, do you think they're going about it the right way or the wrong way?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, JJ is your future QB, five-star talent.
You mentioned JJ, and I think he's, you know,
Michigan doesn't sign QBs like that too often. And he played in some games last year. They liked putting him in there for a drive or two, kind of giving him some. But when you have a schedule like Michigan does the first few weeks, I mean, you could do whatever you want. You could put your kicker at QB. It doesn't really matter. But I think this is, you know, sort of a way where they can transition the starting job away from McNamara without it being too toxic. Like, I truly think that Jim wants McCarthy at QB because I think he realizes McCarthy has a higher ceiling. Might not have the experience yet that McNamara has. McNamara played fantastic last year, got him to the playoffs, but you know, he doesn't have the ceiling that McCarthy has. And if you want to compete with a team like Ohio State, you're going to need to have that upside. Especially, like, you get your run game shut down, you need your QB to win the game. I would put it in the hands of McCarthy over McNamara.
Don't you think, though, that McNamara is doing his very best to make this situation toxic? I mean, he literally, like, in a public press conference after the game, he was borderline, like, whining and bitching about the fact that, like, I don't understand why I'm not the QB.
Yeah, but, I mean, Jim also, he's like, he has the professionalism of NFL ties, bro. Like, he's going to make this peaceful whether you want to or not. He's going to peacefully shut your ass down and put you on the bench if you really want to make it that, you know. But my whole thing is we got to watch McNamara last season, and it's just one of those things of, like, explosiveness and watching somebody be a game leader, game clock guy versus JJ, again, more of an X-factor quarterback, which I think Michigan is going to need more of whenever you're, like you said, playing against an Ohio State later on in the year that has the firepower to just run all over you in multiple ways right now. Even Penn State can give them a damn scare if they don't want to, you know, have any firepower offensively. I mean, you know, you're just going to run into some challenges, I think, as the season progresses if you continue to let McNamara do his thing. I almost don't want to say suffer, but it is kind of suffering to watch.
So,
you know.
McNamara is done, right? He can't transfer anywhere. This is his sixth year, if I remember. Or does he have one more year? Okay, so I'm going to get flack for saying this, but you guys are probably going to chuckle because you know I'm right. If McNamara does transfer, I think just no-brainer connection.
Facts,
in terms of game manager, non-dynamic QB. McNamara, Notre Dame, perfect. Like, he literally, to me, is Ian Book, Ian Book 2.0.
Yeah. The quarterback they wish they had.
And I guess that gives you guys my answer on the topic, is I agree with you guys. JJ should definitely be the quarterback. You need a dynamic guy. Just like you guys said, I'm not going to repeat the same stuff. Very interesting, though. Very interesting tidbit. Very interesting stat here. Michigan, if you look at, I forget what metric it was. I think it was FPI. Or some other, like, strength metric. Michigan has opened the season this year playing the worst two teams. Like, literally dead last and next to dead last in college football. In Colorado State and Hawaii. Hawaii is the worst team in college football. Colorado State is the second worst team. So, another big thing here is if they do decide to go with McCarthy, right? Or they stay with McNamara. I don't know how much, like, obviously McCarthy had a great game, right? But how much of that can you really say at this stage is McCarthy versus playing the worst team in college football?
That could also be a realistic aspect of it. I mean, the world will come to find out whenever they play. I mean, I guess their first test could be somewhere down the road in Iowa, a Penn State. So, We'll find out a little bit later down the road, but I mean, right now I think you stick with the kid that has a more long-term value for
He's
you.
He's slinging it.
Yeah, and you let him get the reps and the experience early, so whenever that time does come, you know, you're better off.
And I guess the only other thing here that's really important to mention before we move on to the next team is you got to make a decision, right? Especially, too, with two QBs who have, like, pretty different. And I know that they were talking about the fact that it doesn't really change the offense that much. The offense is comfortable with both guys. There's not a lot of difference in play calling. It's just more so execution and how JJ is, you know, expanding upon, like, what is the actual play versus him improvising, right, out of the pocket. You gotta pick a guy. Because if you look back, right, 2015, perfect example of this, 2015 Ohio State. You had two guys who couldn't be more different than each other. You had a game manager, and then you had a slinger, right? You got JT Barrett, and you got Cardale Jones. And the entire year, the team kind of flip-flopped. And because the quarterbacks were very different skill sets and very different, like, tendencies, it kind of forced the offense to learn, like, two separate offenses, right?
Too.
So it's like when you have JT in there,
you can watch film.
Like, you know
Cade
you're
trots
just, you're
out
operating
there, stack
differently.
The box. You're not as scared. And you could kind of see what the offense is trying to do. So I agree with you. Like, once in the heat of the schedule, you got to pick a guy. Once you enter the Big Ten play.
Yeah, you got to pick a guy and just ride with him. And then unless he is absolutely stinking it, you got to stay with him. Because then that just starts to fragment the locker room. But another locker room, and I wouldn't really say a locker room, but a very similar situation, I would say, and probably the largest outcries from a fan base is the next team that has a QB controversy, Clemson, between DJ and the upstart freshman Cade Klubnik, who, frankly, although in garbage time against not very good competition, has looked mature and poised well beyond his years as a true freshman. He looks absolutely spectacular. And I think he, just like McCarthy, could take Clemson to the next level. So why not play him?
I honestly think it's, for me, I'd stick with DJ just because it's like, give the kid a year. But I mean, also at the same time, you know, who knows? He could be the legit real deal. But like you said, it's garbage time. I mean, really, could you try and give him the open shot? For sure. I think that he has the ability to be the starter this year. But I think, do you want to risk your chances and your hopes on a freshman right off the bat as a Clemson? Maybe not. I'd stick with DJ just for safety value more so than anything. Let the kid get a year in.
And I mean,
and
if you look at Dabo, he pulled this
skill
before.
Sets that it takes
he brought in
to,
Trevor Lawrence
to adjust to game
halfway
speed,
through
really.
The season.
I think that's the main
thing.
Came
to the national championship. I'm not saying that this Clemson team is as good. I'm not saying that they're a bad team either. But your next two games are against Wake and against NC State. So if you feel like Cade isn't ready, it's probably best you don't start him. Those are two pretty solid teams. And confidence is a very real thing. Like, those Clemson fans have very high expectation. I mean, if DJ can't get the job done, like if they only have 3 points into the third quarter, you know, I think you got to go with Cade. But unfortunately, like, I don't know if I can throw a freshman into this, you know, into these two contests unless I have, like, the utmost confidence. And I'm not in Dabo's mind. But, you know, time will tell. If Cade's starting these games, you know, he has all the confidence in the world in Cade.
Yeah, I think two very good points that you guys made there. Certainly the schedule aspect probably is going to keep DJ at least for the next two games, unless, Greg, like you said, stuff hits the fan. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. For a team that had so much issues and returns so much of the same talent on offense. And frankly, too, like, Clemson is suffering from a lot of the same issues that Bama has right now with their O-line. And then Clemson has no playmakers on the outside. I mean, these guys are highly touted recruits, don't get me wrong. But they're not, it's the same thing. They're dropping passes. They're not getting open. Like, it's not a good mix. And I watched Cade come into that Georgia Tech game, and they were second strings across the board. And he was slinging it to guys who were, you know, not 4 and 5 stars. Like, they were guys that were way back in the depth chart for Clemson, and he was making them look good. So, like, to me, it's one of those things. I agree with you 100%, but, like, the leash has got to be short, because if you're Dabo, you have to realize if you lose, especially if you lose that NC State game, that has huge implications. Because if NC State runs the table, then Clemson can't get into the ACC championship. So that is a big game. So I don't know. Leash has got to be short. And then the last one I'm going to throw in here, this is really... This one's going to be quite out there. We'll see. We'll see how you guys react to this one. But when Quinn Ewers went down, every person in that stadium, regardless of who you were rooting for, unless you were on the sideline with the team, and neither of you can deny this because this went through my head too, everybody thought the game was over the second he walked off the field. They were like, here's it. It's done. Texas's backup is coming in. Bama is going to rout them. Hudson Card came in. And Hudson Card, mind you, third best quarterback behind, it was like CJ and DJ in that class, I think. So he's not a slouch. Dude is a baller. But sitting behind Quinn Ewers, who is like one of the highest rated high school quarterbacks of all time, right? People kind of forget who you are. And he went in there. He was a gamer. He balled out. He kept it close, even on a hobbled ankle. Okay? Like, he played well.
It's not the season.
So now, my question to you guys is, let's just say Ewers is done for season. Or is it 6 weeks or something? Is it like 6 weeks? It's like 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks, I think. Yeah. Okay. So he is at some point probably going to come back this year. If Hudson Card, like, wins almost all or all of his games, is there a scenario where Quinn Ewers can come back and have lost the starting job?
You know, as Oklahoma State fan, I'm going to say I hope not. You know, like, I hope that they just keep Hudson. But also at the same time, like, I'm, you know, the kid is actually, he's not bad. You know, I mean, even last year, he gave everybody a run for their money. It's not like he was trash every game. I think that there was questionability in some of his decision-making. But, like, hell, I mean, when you're sitting on the bench, like you said, you have a reason to fight. I think that's what you're kind of seeing out of Hudson Card. He's like, shit, here's my opportunity to finally get back on the field, because Quinn was going to give him any breath of air. Like, I don't think there was going to be any stopping for the kid. I mean, once he got it going. But it's more of a sad situation for Quinn. You know, I would love to see the kid play more. I think that he was probably one of the more legit kids that were going to play in the Big 12 this year in terms of quarterback positions. So,
are you talking about Quinn?
Yeah. Did I say something else? Did I say Cade or something?
No. You were just saying he. I just want to make sure you're talking about Quinn.
I think it's a more sad situation for Quinn. But, yeah, you know, Hudson Card, like you said, he's legit, bro. Like, I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's got more of a reason to play football now, though.
This guy got benched last year for Casey Thompson, who's now at Nebraska. He didn't play bad last year, but he didn't put up a show either. And that's kind of how it was with, you know, against Bama. Like, you can't say he's bad, but you lose the football game 20-19. Like, you could have punched the ball into the end zone a few times. You know, you heard me talk earlier, like, they should have won that game 10 times out of 10. And he just didn't do enough to take down Bama. And honestly, like, you score a touchdown and you're up 20-10 you know, makes it really hard for Bama to come back at that point. The way their offense was playing, you're forcing them to throw. They can't really throw the ball that well. But, you know, Bama was in the game. They just kept plugging away, and finally, you know, you couldn't close it out, and, you know, they take the lead. And there's not much you can do. And, you know, like Bama, but at the same time, I think they would have won the game with Quinn, and there's no way for us to know what would have happened, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, I probably agree with you guys, and I just wanted to throw it out there because, you know, that it's crazy how college football is sometimes, but...
Bro, I would love to see him finish out the season.
Quinn can probably walk on water right now in Texas, as long as he keeps playing well. As crazy as Texas is about, like, good football players, man, like, they don't care. Like, come back, like, your spot is well saved for you, man, but, like, I don't know. They're nasty over there. They're quick to turn. So if he comes back and he's a little rusty, I don't know. I just wanted to pose to you guys, more so joking, but we'll see. We'll see how Hudson plays. They got a good game this week, I think. Aren't they like UTSA this week?
If he plays, they have...
That'll be a good game. We'll see how Hudson plays there.
They have an opportunity. They're not playing UTSA this week, are they, really? Seriously?
Yeah, I think it's UTSA this week. And I think it's on the road, too. I think it's at UTSA.
They're at home, but still big time game.
Which is such a wild trend this year. Like,
yeah, it's at night.
UNC opened the year and they went back to back on the road against like non Power 5 schools. Oh, Texas is at home? Okay. Okay. Wow. Okay. Yeah, that'll be interesting. We'll see how that game goes. But yeah, a lot of great games this week. And so very much looking forward to it, especially after what week two had to offer. Thank you guys for, you know, giving us your winners and losers. It was a crazy week two. We look forward to week three. And thank all of you listeners to tuning in with us again for another week of college football. Crazy week. We will catch you next week. Make sure you're staying up to date with all of our content on Twitter and all of our platforms, as well as continuing to keep an eye out there. We know we're slacking, but we promise we will get it to you very soon on all platforms. So please be on the lookout for that. But thank you again for listening to Slightly Offsides.
Thanks for listening to Slightly Offsides. We'll catch you next time.